time to start the FTN show.
Yo, everybody. Welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. This is episode 158. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan.
How you doing?
Andrew Whitaker and Adam Abramowitz.
Good evening.
Hi-de ho, hobbyists.
What's going on, everybody?
It is crunch time.
Another day, another batch of free content for the internet.
Look, Games Workshop's been killing it. With the FAQs.
Crushing.
And, you know, I feel comfortable talking about this leaked Chaos Sorcerer, maybe Airman, maybe not, maybe for a 30K box set forthcoming, maybe not. You know, we don't even know. And then, you know, it's like, look, I know you're excited about this thing you weren't supposed to see, but let us just show you this new Karn model.
That is the most genius move that they've made in years, in absolute years. Like, completely own social media in that single video. And now, like, people have to keep their eyes open. Like, you're not going to get anything past GW. They're watching.
It was such a mic drop moment. Hey, we see that there's some leakage going on. Some people let some stuff out of the cat out of the bag in South Korea. That's cool. But check this out. Karn. And it was just like, yeah, we're going to trump whatever you did. It was so great. It was such a class act. They dominated it. They, like, kind of tongue in cheek acknowledged the leak. And then they one-upped it. It was so good. Tip of the hat to Games Workshop. Such a power move. And especially on the internet, which is such a haven for my local gaming group refers to them as Tinas. The people on the internet and the people in your local hobby area that complain incessantly about whatever it is. No matter what happens, they're going to find a way to complain about it. Like, oh, $100 bills are falling from the sky. They're going to complain. And so it was such a slap to the face of the Tinas of the Warhammer 40K community. I was so proud of Games Workshop. I was like, yes, this is my company. I love them.
It's a cool looking model too. I'm already making plans. Like, can I do this in a list? Can I convert some of those Bloodbound into Berserkers? Cause I'm like, now I'm not all excited about wanting to play some Chaos. I mean, not that it takes much to get me excited about playing Chaos.
Well, I think that from a hobbyist perspective, it was awesome, but also from a gamer, I mean, I have a Chaos army and I'm building a Chaos army, but you know, I think that anybody who says, well, they're re-releasing Karn, is that the only of the old sculpts that they're going to release? Are they going to release Corbulo?
I mean, Gabriel Seth? They just did Eldrad. I mean, like, we're not so far removed from it, though, Andrew. Like, we have to know that this is happening because Eldrad has a new model. Now Karn's getting a new model. Who's next?
Yeah, I mean, like...
And look honestly, at what happened like, with the Space Wolf resculpts for, like, Ulrich the Slayer and all of the other resculpts and the remakes that are happening in the other books. We know it's happening.
To Chris's point, though, like, I literally got giddy this afternoon at work. When I saw that video pop up, I took like my 5-minute internet break and I saw that video and I literally got giddy about the Dante resculpt. It's going to happen. And I was
I'm just like that with the Mephiston resculpt.
Dante is so tiny compared to, I mean, anything. He looks, I mean, he's a beautiful model. I love the model.
He really is. I do too. And I've painted three of those models.
That's about where I'm at too. But when you put him next to like a Thunderwolf, just like, what is going on?
It's laughable. It's absolutely laughable. And the same thing to Chris's point about Mephiston, right? Like, these guys need resculpts. They're due for it. And what we've seen with Eldrad, now with Karn, with the Space Wolf, with Ulrich, man, it's going to be so awesome. I can't wait. Games Workshop, take my money. I can't wait.
Look, I was never a big Eldar fanboy, but the old Eldrad model was terrible. Didn't really like it. The new one?
I think the Eldrad model is beautiful. It's still
beautiful. I think the old one is fantastic.
It held up the test of time. I'm happy that we have a new one because it's certainly more dynamic and I'm working with plastic more than metal.
Yeah. I'm on team Adam on this one. The fact that the old staff connected to his head, you know, you had to really clean up that particular part of the model. Eldrad was actually the first model I was ever commissioned on. I painted that for a buddy of mine as a commission painting job. It's a great model. It's a great old model with the emphasis being on the great old model. I think the resculpt is really great.
About this when we got the redrop of Eldrad, that it was a one-piece model. It was the last model, very much a model of its time. But the fact that it stood up as long as it did without, I mean, no one, you could see it on the table and not, and if it was well painted, it was a cool looking model. That's all you accepted it as, a cool looking model. It didn't have to be an old model. Now we have all this context, especially with the new fancy one.
Oh, for sure. But like, I mean, I'm such a what do they call that? The
fanboy?
No, hardly. I'm on the cutting edge, the the vanguard of the new models. I'm
a modernist of the hobby.
I'm such a modernist of the hobby. I'm all about the new stuff.
Okay. In this, we're actually going to talk a little bit about hobby at the end of the show, finishing move segment. We're going to talk about painting over decals. I know, really exciting,
that's,
right?
That's a really tough one.
It's the painting equivalent of tracing, business. Guys. It's great stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about tracing at the end of the show. I have to issue a vocal retraction on something we talked about with Black Shields and the pulverizer hammer, the heavy thunder hammer, that they can't get it. Now, I mean, everything was pointing to that they probably could, but they got the kind of the apothecary curse in the unit description, and part of me drooling over the release. You know, off we do, you just start daydreaming about what you can do with this. When they become a Black Shield, they're no longer a veteran, and it clearly describes what veterans can get. Veterans can get one of those pulverizer hammers. Any model can get a certain other set of weapons, and that includes power weapons, special weapons, thunder hammers, and power fist, but still not the one that does the instant death on six.
Which is a bummer.
It is a bummer. But, you know, life can go on still with the, you can still do some of the similar mechanics of protecting and when you have a guy to come in there. And still, I mean, swinging with a power fist or even a power weapon sometimes is, at the double the attacks is not terrible. I mean, he will certainly still do work and look good doing it. But I feel bad. Anyone that had built a heavy thunder hammer guy, I hope you can transfer his weapon.
I think my big thing with all of Death Watch is it's going to revolve around, I think you guys talked a little bit about it on the show last week. And the other half, I don't think that you did, are the Corvus Black Star. I want to do something with all of the Corvus Black Stars. I want to have an army that has 12 of them if I could fit it. I know that I can't.
That model is $65. I mean, that's a steal. I mean, that is for the model, the cool looking model, what it does. I mean, it can be a dedicated transport.
It's just so versatile.
I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of the model. I think we have some differing opinions on Death Watch about the overall power of them, and maybe we can get to some of that in this show. But I mean, I think they're cool. I mean, they look cool. They're a cool list, and they have things that I think will allow them to be spoilers in certain events. And I think they're great for 3-round tournaments. I'm not sold on five rounds.
Yeah, they're definitely a Deftan army, in my opinion. Paul alluded to we as a collective group have some differing opinions on them. I think that's the value of the Forge the Narrative crew. Genuinely, I believe that. I mean, we're all decent to, you know, pretty good players, and we all have a lot of tournament experience. Paul and I agree on a lot of things, and we also disagree on a lot of things. I personally believe that there are some builds in Death Watch that are very, very elite. I think there's some really, really strong tournament winning and GT contending lists in that codex. Whether that bears itself out, I don't know.
Missions have a lot to do with it too, and I want to touch on this for a minute. I'm a big believer in point limits and great mission structure. And I will say what we were talking about earlier, we'll get to it, about this one of the strengths that I think you want to mention, I don't want to steal your thunder, would work really well in this type of missions that I like.
Can I just jump in real fast?
You're Chris Morgan. You can do whatever you want.
On to the point of the Black Shield with the heavy thunder hammer, I have actually found the GW video where they put a heavy thunder hammer on the Black Shield. So
yeah, your boy Duncan does it.
Yeah, yes, your boy, does. That was the big thing on the internet today, is that, well, Duncan did it, and everybody said, well, this is what GW said.
I am prepared to accept Duncan Rhodes' word as gold as well, and whatever he wants to do is gold.
I've never met Duncan too. Rhodes, but I feel like he and I are we're basically best friends, just based on his videos. So I can call him Duncan. We're basically on a first name basis. He doesn't know I exist. I also think that Duncan probably would have said that all four of your demon princes get their own warlord part of the tetrad.
Yeah,
so. But we'll get to that as well.
Don't steal my thunder. Look, I was giving you all this room, you know.
No, exactly. Before we get to
No, I'm spoiling it. No, go ahead.
So I was just going to say about the Death Watch. There's two things that I would like to bring up. One, I think there are lists buried in that codex that are incredibly powerful.
I mean, I don't even know if it's so buried. If you were just focusing just on Death Watch and no allies, and I believe them better as an ally force, but if you're just taking Death Watch, you could just go down the list and go down every page in the codex.
I think it's buried in the sense that, like, it really takes somebody targeting their list for this particular outcome. You're not going to come upon it in the same way that you'd come upon a Gladius or the same way you come upon a Decurion. It's not ostensibly there. Like, to show up in the list I'm talking about, just as a casual sidebar in 30 seconds, is basically, like, if you take multiple CADs, take, for example, 3 CADs, And then you take in each of your elite slots, that's a total of 9 elite slots and 9 fast attack slots. If you take...
Which you can't do in some areas, the 3 CADs.
That's true in some areas.
We are believers in taking, you know, whatever open... Yes. All, if you're playing all of 7th edition is what
we're... Yes, if you're playing 7th edition 40K, you can do what I'm talking about. That being, you take 9 single model Vanguard veteran units and 9 single model Space Marine fast attack bike units. And if you do that with the accompanying Deathwatch kill team troop choices, you end up with something like 21 single model unit, which is, you're basically playing kill team at 1850 points.
Which is really themey for Deathwatch, if you ask me, because they're specialists behind the lines, you know.
The whole, like, you just drop me off, I'll take care of business, I'm just a single model guy just going through, just murdering stuff.
Just doing my thing.
Right? It's very fluffy, it's very fun, and I think, And I do think that it takes a pretty high skill player, and I'm not trying to be that sound that elitist way. I think that it's going to take somebody who kind of has
it takes a
tactical acumen to run 18. Yes, it does take a deft hand, but I think that's a very, very powerful list. And I think there are other powerful lists in there. Namely, I think the frag cannon is banana land strong.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's a 2-shot las cannon at 12 inches.
The problem's always been the delivery source, and Deathwatch takes care of that being an issue.
Exactly. Yeah. Welcome to the drop pod. It's so strong.
But one of the things I think Andrew's getting at though is like where you have a Gladius. Gladius has such a firm structure that you have to adhere to, and so much of your points is invested in meeting the minimum requirements to make this happen. Whereas with Deathwatch, just as you're playing the game differently and you have to have a little bit more of that tactical acumen that Andrew was talking about, when you're list building, you have to behave that way as well, because it is not a set in stone framework, two-dimensional way of building your list. And I don't want to talk down about it by saying two-dimensional, but when you fill out your Gladius,
when 1100 of your points are spent automatically, that's somewhat of a two-dimensional list. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not quite so much list building component as an individual player, right? It's built into your codex. But I wanted to talk about that. Yes, I think Deathwatch is great. I think there's some phenomenal list builds in there. Trust me, I'm writing an article. You'll check it out on the Forge Narrative on the website. It'll be forthcoming. But so too, what I like to talk about from a hobbying perspective, Deathwatch is not an easy hobbying task.
No.
It is.
Are you just, because all the bits or the black armor? What are you?
So yes, all of the above.
Yeah.
I was talking to Adam and a couple of the other guys from the general staff about, wow, what if I really want to do this army build. And obviously Adam being the world-class painter that he is.
You need to stop saying that, but thank you.
You shut your pie hole. we were talking about it and we were like, well, how do we do this? Black armor is so hard. It is just, I have a Black Templar's army. And it is, I think it's legitimately my best painted army. I think it looks better than my Blood Angels. I think it looks better than my Vestroians. It looks better than my Knights.
Well you can paint a really, really well-painted black army that no one ever thinks is well-painted.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying yours isn't. I'm just saying that's the challenge is how do you pass that 3-foot away test?
I have lived that life where I think my army should compete for or win best painted. And it doesn't even get votes because people walk by and they're like, oh, that guy spray painted his army black and then moved on. It's so very, very difficult.
You really freaking noobs.
Exactly. I'm like, no, pick up my toys and look at them. They're better than yours. I'm like,
I painted the inside of the tanks.
I painted the inside of my Land Raider. Give me credit.
I want my half point.
And it's not, it's part of the battle is yes, you know, you want. You want the credit and you want people to look at it and say, wow, this looks really great. But so too, do you want it to not be so freaking difficult? And that's the one big drawback for me for Deathwatch that is I literally sat back in my chair and I groaned at the notion of painting a black power armor army.
And you know what?
So difficult.
There are some rewarding things about it. Like, look, I don't want to sound all doom and gloom about it because yes, painting black sucks. It's very difficult to make look good. I mean, when you're up close and it's 3 inches away from your face, you're a golden demon winner. But when it's 5 feet across the table, 6 feet, 4 feet, 3 feet, 48 inches across the table, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what the light is. It just looks like black primer, and that's what we were getting at earlier. But there are some rewarding things about it, and it's the fact that you get to individualize every unit and tell a narrative that otherwise you couldn't tell in a normal chapter. You know, through the right shoulder pad, this is a Howling Griffin, this is a
I'm not positive, but I believe that in like the original Death Watch, the armor wasn't all black. You didn't have all black armor. I mean, I could be wrong. I think you still wore your chapter armor.
I thought you did.
And then you had the shoulder pad. Or maybe you got the shoulder pad when you came back to your chapter.
Yeah, you keep your Death Watch shoulder pads when you come back and you're back in with your battle brothers.
Completed your Night's Watch.
But did they switch to black armor when they went to the Death Watch originally? I don't remember.
Yes. Yeah, so they would bring their armor and it would either get painted black or it'd be put in a vault and they would put on some of the Death Watch armor.
Okay. I was going to try to give people a hobby way out of painting an entire black army, but it sounds like, you know,
I mean, crushing hopes and dreams.
The best way to paint Rainbow Marines, I guess, if you want, you're going to do retro Death Watch.
That doesn't seem like the full fluff supports it.
Whatever the case may be in terms of, yeah, I mean, Death Watch gives great credence to if you're forging the narrative, if you are really trying to like build a fluffy army, it's a cool way to tell a story with your army. But I think it is a challenge from a list building perspective. It is an incredible challenge from a tabletop commander perspective, and it is an incredible challenge from a hobbyist perspective. It is top to bottom one of those. It is a total hobby difficult mission to take on, and I think it would be tremendously rewarding if you got into it. But it's definitely one of those things like, man, this is an uphill battle. Well,
dude, I've been painting Blood Angel 30K HQ models for the last couple of weeks or so. And they're all, I mean, I'm really enjoying the individuality of them and just painting for the fun of it. And I think you could do that with this arm, with the Death Watch army in a similar respect.
I totally agree with you. I mean, like literally I posted on Twitter on Monday. I got home on Monday, got a little bit bored. I painted a Manticore for my Imperial Guard army. Like, you know, you paint for the fun of it and like, I slapped up a man, just slapped up, you know, started edge highlighting and everything else like that. But to Paul's point, there's some great fun to be had in painting just for you. And I think that if you wanted a passion project where you're painting just for you, where you could take your time and really, you know, if somebody were to say, hey, by August of 2017, I want 1,850 points of Death Watch, this would be a really, really fun way to do it. Because you could take your time, meticulously paint the models, develop a story, have a narrative, and also come out on the other side with a very, very competitive army.
And to keep us kind of on point, with all the individual models in these units you're talking about, the three taking multiple combined arms attachments and filling out the force orc slots with single model units with probably typically differing war gear or certainly different bits if you wanted to, from their different legions, or I shouldn't say lead chapters, my apologies, getting my eras confused, but different chapters, so much room there.
Oh, huge, huge, tons of room for customizability. I mean, just what comes to mind in my mind is say you're building three single model bike units. Well, you want to build a White Scars guy. In my mind, I would want to build a White Scars guy. So I've got this White Scar, and I would build him with a scimitar for his power weapon. And then I would want to build a Black Templar because I've always been in love with the notion of mounted knights. You know, obviously, like, there's that great line in Braveheart where, like, no army has ever survived a charge of heavy horse. Like, the thought of an armored knight on a horse with a lance is super strong. I love it. So I would want to build a Black Templar knight with a lance.
My response to that line, Andrew, was always, that's because they never made it to charge distance because they got shot by longbows.
Well, historically accurate as that may be.
Eventually,
but yeah, prior to the longbow, right? The heavy horse was invincible.
Right.
And so then you would want, like, so I've got this Templar knight with his lance, and I've got this, you know, this Mongol White Scar with his scimitar. And then I would want to build something like maybe an Andalusian knight. We'll come up with a chapter of my own on his bike. It's
some
cool
Visigoths.
Exactly, some Visigoths or even,
man, get some of those like Chaos Space Marine heads that have the like almost like skull face for the helmets and stuff. You know, I mean,
oh, dude, there's so many cool ways to do it. Absolutely. And each one, and like who's to tell you you're wrong? Like, you know, the sky's the limit. Invent your own chapters. And I'll tell you what would be really, really fun to do with this is because Forge World comes out with, and it's really actually pretty inexpensive. I mean, in the grand scheme of 440K, right? Like, we're not, this is an adult hobby. This is not something that, you know.
Yeah, we're talking to our people here.
Exactly. Like, hear me for what it's worth. But like, as far as inexpensive things goes, I am a huge fan of the Forge World power weapon packs. I think they cost about 25 to 30 United States dollars, and you get the power weapons packs, and they come with a couple of power mauls, a bevy of swords, and all the swords are different. So you have sabers, you have scimitars, you have...
You're talking about the Legion weapon, the upgrade kits. I think it's like
11 or 12 different weapons in each set, too. So
there's quite a few. I got one in my closet right here.
Exactly, and I think there's two or three different weapons kits. So at some point, I know that me and my buddy ordered these from Forge World. And I think we ordered two copies of, or
I think they have lightning claws in them too.
There's lightning claws. There's power fists, chain fists, swords, and then they have the two-handed super long chain swords. The eviscerators.
The eviscerators are great.
Literally the best upgrade kits money can buy. And it's like, you know, like you're going to spend those dollars anyway. You might as well order something from Forge World, combine it with that freaking Malkadoran furnace that you always wanted, get the free shipping, whatever it takes.
That's the thing. These are perfect for like, oh, I need to spend 5 more pounds in order to get free shipping.
Get the upgrade kit.
Well, I have a totally different recommendation. Like to anybody out there that's looking to get some Forge World bits just to customize your army, make sure that you get this exact set and make sure it has the Eviscerator in it because I don't care who you are. If we are playing counts as, and that's just regular chainsword, and that's whatever you want to do. If you have an eviscerator in your army, I'm going to give you 10 high fives just because it looks cool. Even if you look
incredible.
Exactly. It's just
someone play Seth against Adam.
What's that?
Seth's eviscerator is not as cool as the actual eviscerator.
No. Seth's, dumb.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. Well, anyway, all that to say, I think that there's some great ways to outfit.
Well, you can get these plastic kits, and you could spend a little bit extra and get some really what will appear unique.
Absolutely. You kit bash them with the resin kits from Forge World, and then you can match physical model detail with chapter fluff. You know, if you have a weapon that matches the fluff of the chapter, it really goes a long way to telling the narrative of your army and everything else like that. And I think Death Watch is just one of those things. And having read through the codex now, you know, my cold read was that it wasn't that good. I stand by the fact that I think in the main, it's not earth shattering, but I absolutely, after having read it now in detail for the last 2 weeks, super powerful.
Let me separate this though for a second, because I think, you know, I'm not sure exactly where Chris stands on this. I know Paul's going to say this. Paul's going to say, great ally, but not a...
Andrew, that may be the rightest you've ever been on this show. That is what I was going to say.
But I'm going to double that
up. All right, we're done, guys. We're done.
We peaked. Everything from this point on is downhill.
We want to find out what are the best builds with this book. I've never... Like, the only allies I've ever played with were Farside Enclaves with Tau. You know, I've never done, you know, White Scars with Dark Angels or anything like that, Eldar, Dark Eldar. I want to find a way to make this book good. And I think that, to Andrew's credit, and Andrew and I have talked about it a little bit, I think there's some neat tricks in here that we could make work. I feel like...
So kind of to go along with what you're saying, Adam, I feel a lot of the same way in that when I look at this book, my first thought isn't, all right, what other stuff can I take from other sources to make this good? I kind of want to just separate the wheat from the chaff and dig right into it.
What Space Marine Army could I ally this with to make it good?
No, it's about I'm a single source player as often as possible. So when I see Death Watch and when I'm thinking of my list building, I'm also thinking, what can I do with just these?
I don't want to discount the opinions. I think that there is strength there, and especially like I was saying originally at the top of the show, in the missions that I would design or like to play in, there is a lot of strength there because they're very dynamic. They can do complete lots of tasks at the same time while being a threat. Where we differ in the opinions that I think a lot of the current power builds will defeat that. And that, in my mind, is what separates it from, you know, what you should be packing to a five rounder as opposed to what you should be packing to a three rounder.
Well, and what it comes down to for me is when you're playing with those kinds of lists that Paul's drawing a line between the three rounder and the five rounder, the six rounder, depending on your attitude about going to the event, if you're wanting to go 5-0, you may or may not want to bring it, but whatever you do, you got to love it.
Very mission dependent.
The army enough.
Very, very, very mission dependent. And you being the person that's making the journey, I mean, make that calculated decision. I certainly don't want to tell anybody that they can't do things, or shouldn't do things. I'm just saying that's how I make divisions. And you're right about that, Chris. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. A player who is passionate about the army that he is trying to play will find ways to make it work in ways that the general masses who dismiss it out of hand don't expect. Well, and those are the kinds of experiences that make playing with an underdog, you know, I'm saying underdog, but a non-Eldar Space Marine army makes you feel. It gives you that rush.
I think that's a fair point, though. I mean, like, what you want to bring and how you want to list design have a lot to do with the individual player. There's right.
You got to have fun during those games, or what are you really doing? I mean, ultimately, that's kind of we believe that too. But I don't want to dilute points here, though, is that I believe that you guys are saying that there is a lot of strength in the Codex by itself, and that it has the chops to chew through a major tournament.
That's an early diagnosis, I would say.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know if somebody's going to accept the challenge of what we just laid out about hobbying plus...
It's a worthy challenge.
I aspire to that. I don't know if I can accomplish it, but I aspire to it.
It's a worthy challenge. And I don't want to discount it. I don't want to short sell it either. There is, again, I'm saying it's all about missions and point levels. And of course, what you can play with in your area, whatever your tournament scene is. But I think that we want to hear things from folks about what works for them, what they think is going to work. If people have some ideas about what's working for them, something they tried, something they've been playing for the last couple of weeks, or maybe what they think the next evolution of what they're going to play is with this Codex, I'd love to hear about it.
It's only going to make my next list building experiment better.
Before we totally move on from Deathwatch, I do want to mention, to Paul's credit, well, not to Paul's credit, but just add credence to the, they may function better as allies than they do as a primary Codex source. Their relics lend themselves, I think, to singular additions to already established lists. And just as evidence of that, I want to draw everyone's attention. The Dominus Aegis is, I think, the best example of that. It says, if a model equipped with the Dominus Aegis does not move in the movement phase, its unit gains a 4+ invulnerable save until the start of your next movement phase. As soon as I read that, I thought to myself, like, okay, well, that's basically an auto-include for all gunline Imperial Guard lists. If I'm running a 50-man blob,
And you want to give Azrael the day off. Like, he's got some fallen to torture or something.
It's a lot cheaper than Azrael,
it's
right?
It's so much cheaper. Like, a watch captain with Dominus Aegis is something like 115 points. As opposed to Azrael, it runs you about 220.
I think it's 170. Or a watch captain. Never mind. I thought you were talking the... Never mind. Watch captain.
Yes. A watch captain with this Dominus Aegis is about 115 points to give the entire blob a 4+ invulnerable save. Yes, please and thank you. Right? Like, that's a huge thing. I think there's little bits and pieces in the Codex like that.
Wait a second. You're playing a guard blob without an Aegis defense line?
Well, even with I think this is a fine addition to a unit with an Aegis, right? Like, there's too much that ignores cover.
It makes it better against Tau, yeah.
It's also better against in close combat, right? Because I'm not moving in the movement phase. If you assault the blob.
Yeah, it's until the start of your next movement phase. It doesn't say against shooting attacks only.
And it just says, if you did it has a T-shirt in the movement phase. As soon as you assault my squad, I'm not going to move in the movement phase, right? So now my whole blob is going to have a 4+ invulnerable save. Very strong, very important, very powerful. It's basically HQ plus troop is the same cost of what Azrael would cost me to begin with. And that's a big deal. So
planning to try to get a couple games in this weekend. We'll try to roll some Death Watch and see how it goes.
I'd love to hear about it.
I certainly have the Marine bodies to count as.
Yeah, I mean, anybody with a Space Marine army could count as most of the stuff to test it out first anyways. I mean, that's not a stretch by any imagination.
Well, guys, let's take a quick break. We will come back and finish the show.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hobby supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Everybody, we are back. I'm still TPM. I got Chris Morgan.
Yep, they're back. I'm front.
Andrew Whitaker and Adam Arawas.
Nobody can see from behind me.
I'm so happy I'm not behind you right now.
Guys, let's talk quickly about some upcoming events. I know that we've talked in the past with the Battle Haven guys, and Chris Morgan is going to be there. It's not this weekend. It'll be the next weekend.
Yeah, it's gearing up to be a pretty epic nerd weekend because we have the Salt Lake Comic Con right before it ends the same day that Battle Haven starts, and it's like the second biggest Comic-Con in the United States, or so the media tells me. And I'm going down to Battle Haven, staying there for about 4 days over the Labor Day weekend. And just there's going to be tons of 40K and 30K and such a nice locale. I'm very excited.
It's a very social event, so it's definitely ones that we try to support here from the show. And it's I don't think there's like an organized tournament. It's more of just an overall gaming weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do too. Like as a group, we'll go out. We have there's a private lake that we can go kayaking on. There's hiking up into the mountains. You know, there's ping pong, there's a video game room,
is the tie that binds, though. That's the
Everything is basically like the bones of this monster are
even made the meals are themed around games and 40K in general, I think, though, right?
Yeah. We actually just voted on what we wanted to do for the final day meal, and I think the vote went pretty solid towards the chaos themed meal instead of. I believe it was just like an Eldar sort of salad bar, something like that. I can't remember. The one option was just so superior to the other, I don't even remember. But I think we went with chaos. I'm especially looking forward to the Tao Sushi Night.
That's pretty hilarious.
So all of the meals are themed. It's professional catering. It's the hype is real for me right now. It's going to be nice to be able to go to one of these things, and it's in my own backyard.
That's really cool. So in Utah, if you guys have not already made some plans to check out the site, maybe, you know, check it out, see if it's your thing. Chris, we can't wait to hear some feedback from the event that you're going.
Yeah, I'll get some good pictures too. Battlehaven.us is the website.
Yep. I got Dragon Con that weekend. That's what I'll be doing.
My office where I work is attached to the hotel to the hotels that Dragon Con is hosted at. I may run into Paul, but I won't be there on Saturday. Paul, what are you dressing up as for the weekend?
I'm not dressing up this time. My sons are looking forward to that. My oldest has been wearing the costume we're putting together for him almost like every day when he gets home from school. He puts it on, haunts the house.
That's legit right there because he's teenager now. Yeah,
he's pumped about it. Yeah, so whatever. Looking forward to it. But it's a really cool weekend. You're in there with like 60,000 other people, and like you can't get into an elevator without somebody talking about what a transporter would do in a quantum field, and if somebody had this superpower, or somebody talking about their 30th level paladin and their ring of I love it. I'm not even this is
nerds.
I love it. I'm kind of an introvert anyway by nature in those situations, but I love observing those things going on. of the 60,000 people, like 85% of those people are having those kind of conversations. So it's going to be cool, Andrew. Yeah, definitely. If you're that close, hang out. Going to be down there with a bunch of other buddies.
All you got to do is look up, and you'll find them. Right? You'll just be.
I'm super useful in a crowd. They're like, all right. Everyone go their separate ways. We'll meet at Whitaker in 35 minutes. And just find me in a crowd.
Tall people as a landmark. It works every time.
I use them as a sundial. So like if I need to figure out what time of day it is, because you're locked in a hotel.
Functional alarm clock.
Yes, exactly. I understand exactly what time.
I imagine Troop is a lot the same way, right? Just like a giant human.
He actually covers half of the earth.
You can actually measure his proximity by the movement of the tides. Because he is just a giant, strong dude.
Yeah, he is. That's the truth. So those are the events coming up. October 15th, this is a month before Warzone Atlanta. I'm going to do a new returning player casual event at a local store here. Last time you guys remember me talking about it before, where I did 1200 points, I think it's 1250, maybe 1250 points. Going to move to 1500, with the same army list restrictions. You know, guys know I don't personally like army list restrictions, but for people that, you know, that haven't played the game in a while or that wanted that casual environment, I've implemented the same, what I would call, what are we calling it? Type 1 type play restrictions.
Right. So basically, like, safe mode 40K, you know, especially for people coming back into it.
What weekend is your, I hate to call it beginner's tournament.
Well, that's, it's a casual event. It's a very, very casual event. It's going to be October 15th. And it's not just for new players or returning players. It's going to be for anyone, but it's the spirit of the event is very casual. The missions are a little bit more casual. The army list designs, restrictions, promote a little bit more of the less aggressive games, more, I don't want to say fair games, but you don't have to necessarily be familiar with every codex to build a army that will do well in the event.
Gotcha. I know the following weekend is the tournament that Ricky Addington is running.
Yep, which is a primer for Warzone. It's, you know, everything's leading up to Warzone. We're very pumped. And that the 30K kill team event, a lot of enthusiasm around it, going to happen Friday night at Warzone Atlanta. So it happened before the main event. Just another excuse to move models around, you know, and I'm holding off before publishing the rules, you know, until we get a little bit more information on some rumors we've heard.
Well, you know, and what's awesome is seeing games like 30K and Age of Sigmar really starting to pick up steam. In my area, we're starting a monthly 30K game day based around some of the stuff that's in book four, because it has an excellent campaign system. And I am getting more and more people that are interested. We're up to 14 people that say they're going to start playing in this monthly. And a year ago, before Betrayal of Kalth, that was unheard of.
Tickets for the 30K Kill Team event will go up on the Warzone Atlanta site pretty soon. They're not there yet. Want to try to finalize, again, all the rules and stuff. But they will be going up pretty soon. But if you certainly have any intent or desire to play, let us know. You send an email to the show or to Warzone Atlanta address, and we'll make sure that a spot gets reserved for it. Got some pretty good prize support getting lined up for this event, too. I think it's going to be a real fun time. Of course, the bars will be open. And the full hall will be open.
I'm not going to be playing, but I'm going to be there cheering everybody on.
You're welcome to play as well. Even I'm sure you're going to have enough miles to kick around.
I think it's a great opportunity for me to yell at everybody and give them a hard time.
Adam is staying at Casa de Mi that weekend, so I think he and I will be arm in arm, cruising around.
In rare form.
Shaking hands, kissing babies, taking full advantage of that bar, the aforementioned barn.
Hopefully wearing your FTN shirts. For those that haven't checked it out yet, we do have Forge Narrative shirts available on the ForgeNarrative.net website. So it's a great way to support the show. If you enjoy listening every week, check it out. Maybe pick up a shirt. Some sizes, we are definitely have lower inventory of. So if you are in those size categories, I guess the best way to put it, make sure you get them now if you'd like one.
Very, very low inventory on smalls. That's generally not a lot of smalls going around. I had talked to Paul as well. I mean, if you, just as a sidebar, if you saw me at ATC, if you've seen me at the most recent GTs, I'll be the guy wearing trucker hats. We're going to have some trucker hats available as well pretty soon on the website. Gotta keep it trending.
Nice swag. You know, that's it. Just keep it. And we'll probably have
Forge a Narrative trucker hats like the Blood Angels hats that you were wearing.
Dope. That's exactly right.
This will be a full allotment of things at Warzone Atlanta, of course, leading up to it. So anyway, I don't want to take away from the kill team. I think this is going to be a fun time, and I'm really looking forward to anything that may come out for that and incorporating into the 30K side, because there's much 30K has such a very, very strong narrative that's getting a lot of attention right now, and so it's kind of fun to play in that in the narrative zone. Just really looking forward to it. Been building models, just personally, and I know that it invites that type of, that creativity. So finishing moves. This is a segment we've been doing, that after you've got your model done, you've painted your model, how you like it, things that you can do to kind of bump it up to that next level that maybe you were worried about doing or never even thought about doing. We're trying to incorporate some techniques and some styles into it. And today I want to talk about painting over decals. And I'm talking about any decal specifically, but like Space Marine decals or Eldar decals or Tau decals, that after you've got them on the model, you're just not quite happy with the way that they look. Either it's because I just put a white Blangel decal on a black cloak, and some of the black shown through the decal, and I didn't like how that looked. Ultramarines, when I'm putting ultramarine symbols on shoulder pads, sometimes the white doesn't cover up the blue as much as I want, so I've got to paint over it. Have you guys experienced the same thing?
Yes. Obviously, yes. Unequivocally, yes.
I'm not a huge fan of transfers. If I want to paint a squad marking on there or put a squad marking on there, I'd rather paint it myself, even if it doesn't turn out 100% perfect.
That's adorable. A lot of us don't do that, though.
Right, but yeah, I understand.
It's so hard. I mean, and that's but no, and it, like that's just such a that's a hallmark of somebody who's just a superior painter. Like Paul and me and Chris, we don't paint our own squad marks because we just don't have the skill level to do it.
Numerals, like well, and maybe
I will paint them, but they will not look very good.
No, they're not going to look as good.
Comparison to an artisan,
the decals serve a purpose. They are. I mean, they come in every box of figures now, which I think they're great. Forge World has a very impressive big, you know, A4 sheets of decals you can get, which are
they're
awesome.
Fantastic.
Now some of these and some of what I want to talk about won't apply. Like some of these knightly heraldry decals and stuff, you're not touching that up. But they're the colors lend themselves to not needing it. But a single color chapter symbol or a Roman numeral, this is when you might find it really appropriate to do that. And I think there's a couple different ways you can approach it. For skulls or round things, things that have a very specific geometric shape, you can actually paint behind it and put the decal over, paint where you're going to put the decal and then put the decal over it. Same function. You don't get that transparency. Sometimes it may not seem appropriate, like putting this giant white blood angel symbol on the packet on the back of a black flowing cloak. I'm not going to trust myself to freehand any of those wing flanges. I'm going to have to.
It's a struggle. That's for sure.
If it doesn't look how I want it to look, but I still want the symbol on there, I'm going to have to go in there and paint over the decal with paint, whatever color I want.
And so, one of the just to hop in here real quick, probably the biggest thing that I've the biggest user of this technique that I know would be my dad, who got me into wargaming to begin with, and he on his Flames of War tanks in particular, where they have a lot of those tiny little symbols, he does have a tendency to just trace over them with the paintbrush because there is that consistency involved with the way something looks. Like that with a fresh printed decal, you know, especially with the way that you can print them, you can even make your own decals nowadays. A lot of times the inconsistency.
That for a second, because it's not. It's not very difficult to do, but go ahead, Chris.
But sometimes it's just an aesthetic preference for people that they want the paint to look the same on the decal as it does on the rest of the tank. And I feel like painting over a decal has the practical purpose, like Paul was talking about, like the flowy robes, but it also has a sort of a one more step to something looking a little bit better overall that they can pull off. You just have to, kind of going back to what Andrew said, you have to make sure you're not doing it in such a way as that you're retouching your retouches, your retouches.
So in my opinion, there's two approaches to this, and everybody has a valid opinion and approach. There's no wrong way to do it. If you're going to use decals and you do not want to paint over them because you don't trust your fine detail skills, but you want it to look natural. And Paul was saying that, you know, some of the blue or some of the red might be showing through that white decal. Well, there's a very simple answer to that. Weather the decal. And all it takes is a little bit of sponge work, or you could even do it with a brush.
On armor, this is super appropriate and looks good. If that, yeah, I mean, you can.
It's a quick, simple fix, and it's going to look super natural. And you are going to look like a pro painter who's internet famous if you're able to do this. So if you're good with decals, and I'm not particularly great at decals, like I struggle putting decals on models. It's not my strong suit.
I use this product called Solvacet, and everyone fantastic. Tells me that, no, you're talking about a different product. I had to take a picture of it and post it on Twitter to show Solvacet, like, no, this Microsoft. Is what I use. This is the thing that works for me.
But I also think the other approach, if you want it to look bright and brilliant, it's never going to look super brilliant unless you paint over top of it. And we're not talking like painting exact lines, but just like you would edge highlight a shoulder pad. If we're going to just talk Space Marines, because that's the de facto, you know, model that we're all going to talk about and reference.
This applies to Necrons too, and Tau. I think a lot of those armies use decals somewhat routine. If you ask
you know, me. But you know, let's talk about Tau for a second, just because I'm familiar and Justin's not on the show to give me crap about it. But you know, tau decals are very simple. They're very geometric. They're straight lines. And if you mess up, if you're using your brush and you mess up and you get a little too wide with something, you could always go back in with, a color more suitable to the armor underneath to clean it up. Very simple. You know, we're not talking about skulls or Dark Angel's wings or anything like that. But you got to find, with everything that we do, and this is always my recommendation, I feel like when we talk about the finishing moves, you have to find what works for you. I think where we've all presented a couple solid options as to the ways to make this work. But I recommend to everybody out there, you know, find a model that you have just sitting on your table that, you know, isn't going to see play, or you don't really care about how it looks at the end of the day. Slap a decal on there, play around with some gloss and matte varnishes and some Microset and Microsol and whatever Paul uses. What's it called, Paul?
It's called Solvacet. I think I bought it back in the 70s.
Yeah, is it Paul? You know, Paul's 140 years old, so.
Yeah, but, it's 142.
142. Play around with it, but like once you get it set on there and it's perfect, don't let it sit right there. Just see what you can do with like a number zero brush and a little bit of paint, and just to try and bring it back to life. And you're going to be impressed, I think. And again, don't forget about the sponge work. Like weathering that decal just takes it to a whole nother level.
I think that is something that's very important. I mean, we originally started talking about painting over the decal just to make it look like it's solid, like it's a part of the miniature and not a decal. To give you that consistent color across the entire thing. But if that doesn't work for you, or it's one of those things that, or it's a shape that's difficult to do where you just don't feel comfortable doing it, you could beat it up a little bit with a sponge or a stipple brush. And it will, if your paint's the same consistency that you would touch up the armor with or whatever, it's going to look like a pro job.
Well, we should talk about post shading, what that means and how to do that, especially if you're an airbrush user. But just briefly, like if you're familiar with the post shade, and essentially you are heightening the contrast of your model once you've got everything where you want it to. Even, you know, some people will do it, and sometimes I'll do it depending on the model after I do my edge highlighting. And what you're doing is bringing that darkness of the model in the forefront, and it makes it a more realistic blend between your dark, medium, and high tones and your edge highlight, and it blends everything together. Adding that post shade after a decal is really smart. Like it's almost a genius move. I've never done it before, but like I'm telling you from a functional point of view, like it will look legit, especially if you have some weathering on there. Try it. Somebody try and post a photo to the Facebook page. I want to see how it works out. If it doesn't work, let me know, and I'll send you a new shoulder pad or something like that.
I think that where we're kind of going with this too, we kind of touched on the finish of the model, and sometimes painting over what would be probably a shiny something that reflects the light differently than the rest of the model, maybe something you aesthetically different, you know, depending on how you seal your model, if you're going to be sealing it or not. I always think you should seal the model.
Absolutely should.
I can't even look at people with a straight face when they tell me that they don't seal their models, but I know that the people have their reasons.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a protectant layer. So if that model gets knocked off the table because you're playing Angry Neckbeard who likes to pound his fist on top of that plywood and it falls off 3 feet to the ground, it's probably not going to chip as bad if you've got like a matte coat on top.
Yeah, agreed with that. So with the decals, we're also talking about making your own. And this is something that sounds intimidating, but it really isn't. If there's an image or a sheet of images that you like, you could print it off on decal paper. Mm-hmm. This exists out there. You can get it. And it pretty much most, I think, office supply places may sell it. But if they don't, it's commonly available online. And with any kind of like modern printer, you can get a good image. And then you put, this is going to sound like a lot, but 3 or 4 coats of high gloss sealant on the page after you print it, and you have functional decals.
Well, and you know, I mentioned them a couple months ago when we were talking about the stencils that I was using. And Fallout Hobbies, and this is by no means an advertisement. They give nothing to us on the show. We've never gotten free product. They make great product. That's why I'm talking about them. But they will actually make custom decals and stencils. And that's another thing. I mean, if we're talking about decals, stencils can work in this field. You know, you can put a stencil down that'll work, and they can work with you to make, you know, the stencils and the decals that you want. And especially if you're using an airbrush, I know I said that before, you know, stencils are great. I mean, they solve problems.
Yeah, even if you're just blocking off areas with a piece of cardboard.
Absolutely. You can go on Amazon or go to Walmart.
I don't want to get too far off topic, though. Yeah. With this segment here, decals are, I mean, they're easy, and they're easy to slap on. A lot of people do it. A lot of people don't go to this extra step. And we're talking about spending, you know, painting over an Ultramarine symbol or any kind of Legion symbol from anything takes maybe 5 extra minutes.
Not even.
I mean, I'm talking about for like a group of models.
Andrew, how many decals did you have on your 6 dreadnoughts? Andrew died. He's gone. He's dead.
So don't be afraid of doing this stuff. And some of the things we're going to talk about here are taking you slightly out of the comfort zone. And maybe these are tips that, you know, probably people have in their belt, but some people don't. And so I like kind of talking about it to get people's awareness of what you can do opened up.
And that's one thing. I mean, it's nice being here real time so that I can listen to all of this wisdom, because this is a technique that I particularly don't use that often, if at all. My transfer game is not strong, but at the same time, I agonize over how am I going to get these two free-handed symbols that are supposed to be the same thing to look like they were done by the same person, and that person was not drunk one of the times.
Even your own hand.
It's like, and we're going to twitch like that.
I think to wrap up the segment, there are two ways to put paint, use paint to make a decal look better easily, very, very easily. And that is, if it's like a round shape or a square or whatever, you can put a little bit of the base color of the transfer where you're going to apply it. And after it dries, you know, maybe you put a little bit of coat or sealer on it with a brush and put the decal over that. That will let the keep the armor color from showing through the decal color, or to hand paint a little bit using a smaller brush over the decal after you've already applied it to help bring up that strong tone of the decal.
I think painting over is especially with like some of the decals that we see out there that have some relief to it. And by relief, I mean like some whatever's in the background is going to show through. Hey, look, do whatever works for you. Paul, if painting underneath works for you, do it.
I'm just saying it's an arrow in the quiver. So there may be some if you don't feel like you're comfortable painting over the decal, maybe you paint under it and you might get the same effect.
And going back to like, you know, as we're wrapping this up, you know, a good listener of the show, a friend of mine was asking me, how do I make a power sword look cool without an airbrush? And I broke down how to do a wet blend and what it means to do that. He says, I've never done that before. You're never going to know until you try. Just try it. There's a bajillion, you know, YouTube videos and tutorials out there, and hopefully we'll host some of our own.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good topic for the next finishing moves, wet blending.
Oh, let's talk about it. We talk about wet blending. Let's just talk about power weapons.
I'm not a good wet blender, and I've only ever done one cool airbrush power weapon.
Dude, there's several ways to do wet blends without doing just the super artist way where you need a wet palette. We talk about that all day.
Yeah, let's talk about that in the next show.
I'm game.
Cool. Anybody else got anything they want to add before we wrap this up?
No, just looking forward. Big week of gaming next week.
I'm going to be in the open gaming area at Dragon Con. They've got a bunch of Battletech pods. You guys may have heard me talk about them before, where it's like the game from the 90s. Where you actually climb in a seated pod, and you're in a virtual, a slight version of virtual reality, playing essentially Mech Warrior Battletech.
Oh yeah, I remember you've mentioned that.
I'm pretty excited about getting in there and doing that.
If any of our listeners are from the St. Louis, Missouri area, I'll be in St. Louis this weekend. So if you see me about doing the touristy thing, taking photos, just punch me in the back of the head or something
I'd
say hi. Yeah.
I'm going to be playing that Exiles game that we talked about also in the open gaming area. I'm going to dedicate some time to that. Really looking forward to going through that experience a little bit with some of the folks that have been jazzed about it and heard us talk about it on the show. So that's – anyway, yes, it is going to be a bunch of nerd stuff happening in the next couple of weeks. Anybody who's going to be at Dragon Con, send us a message on the Facebook, and I'll be happy to swing by and have a beer or something.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, guys, y'all have a good rest of y'all's week, and we'll see y'all again next week.
Cheers.
Rum Gong.